砂を探せ、裏枯れ葉がもやがて宙になる、そして宙に上がってあとは何だっけ、急な程度で焦った秒速で不条理が始まる、とりあえず選んだせいだから肩もつけなきゃいけないな、退屈の理由は思考停止のエビデンス、守るものも守れないならでしゃばるなよ、共感も栄光も称賛も欲しがるのは野望ってこと、渋滞不明の引力が常識を無理返す引き金を引いてしまうから、冗談じゃねえよファントムフィガー、嘘にまみれ切って蜃気楼、心までかすんで蜃気楼、全然アクアクも信じるのに、
you're listening to Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
And today's episode is a discussional podcast episode. We talk about the news that seems important to us, dive into our community, answer some great questions from our community members, and then say goodbye. So, Chris, how has the last few weeks been for you?
It's been okay.
Good. That's fantastic. Anything amazing happening?
No, not really.
Not really? Just more Genshin?
Pretty much.
More Final Fantasy 14. I know you're just diving into there, just hitting up those dailies.
Actually, not as much, but yeah.
No, I just want to say that just to make you say that.
But yeah, I gotta reactivate my account and get in there some more. But I've been putting too much emphasis on keeping up and doing Genshin. So
yeah, I'm all prepared for a Yoimi that's probably never gonna come. And a Sayu that probably is never going to come. I'm fully prepared for all that.
Yeah, that's in about 6 hours from now. So
yeah, literally, is it like no banners right now? I think
no.
They usually have like a blank.
Ayaka's still up there.
Oh, that's right. It was like 23 hours last night, so that makes sense. So cool stuff there. Like I said, I don't think I'm, because like the 4 stars is great because you get more 4 stars when you're on those banners because it's guaranteed every 10, at least 10. But at the same time, there's no guarantee you're going to get a specific 4-star, so you could technically keep going. I've seen people go like, you know, 90 plus rolls and never get a certain 4-star, so I'm like, I might not even get Sayu either, and I'm probably not going to get Yoimiya on the first pity, and that's going to be like a I don't think it's going to happen, so we'll see. I've never get good on the pity on the 50-50. Never. I also started up Fae Grand Order.
That one was a little bit weird for me to see on his iPad the other day. So
yeah, the summer event, and I kind of wanted the what do they call it, the welfare servant. So I decided to do that, and then I forgot. I was quickly reminded how much time that game requires to do an event. Like, it's just you're literally on the stupid thing 24/7 just to complete an event. It's like, God, I don't remember I remember it, but yeah, Fae Grand Order, their events are like, and it's funny to play something like Genshin Impact where it's like, I want something to do and it's like, it doesn't want me to play it. And then to go back to a game that literally wants you to play it 24/7 just to get a stupid welfare servant.
Yeah.
It's like night and day. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm having to find a plug just to keep it plugged in all the time, just to play it. Just for hours on end, just to grind a stupid event. It's ridiculous, but I got it. She's in my party. And I figured since I have like 4 missions left to do, I might as well finish those and complete the event. But I was telling him, I was like, it's almost like the game wants me to come back because suddenly I know where my luck is extremely good. And I'm getting like 4 stars and 5 stars with like, you know, 1 to 10 rolls. So it's like, yeah. We have a caster Saber coming up and Artoria, so I might throw some, you know, not money, I'm not spending any more money in that game.
Yeah,
just throw what I have in my docket at her to see if I can get her, and then probably call it a day.
That's how I felt every time I was getting ready to quit on Fate Go. It kept throwing new characters at me. I'm like, this is not going to keep me in here.
I think the last time I actually played the game was when the Tama character popped up, the saber bird girl. I forget what her name is. I rolled after her, didn't get her, and I'm like, okay, I think I'm done with this game. So I think I stopped like just before then, but I just popped back in just to try that, and I kind of stopped there. And I think that was literally, shoot, that was probably the beginning of 2020. So yeah, I've probably missed quite a few events since then.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's like I do miss the game, sort of. I miss the characters and the plethora of great seiyus that they had in that game. Like, I miss all their voice acting and stuff that they had in that game. It's just the gameplay itself frustrates me. Like, I'm reminded of these little things that the game does. Like, it'll say, okay, form a party for this, and it'll tell you which classes. And so you form a party for that. And then you get into the fight, and what happens? Oh, they get a buff that goes against that the classes that they're for. And it's like, okay, now I have to exit the fight and set up a different party because this is set up this way. Or you'll get in the fight and you do a break bar. And what happens? Oh, they always end up charging fully their MP and they get off their MP. And it's like, well, okay, well, now I know. Let me cancel out the game, come back in, use invincibility before I break their bar because this apparently is a mechanic that it has. None of it's like, It's set up to frustrate you. It's not set up to follow the rules that it has already established. It's constantly breaking its own rules, and that just frustrates the hell out of me. So,
yeah, it is funny that it's almost night and day. I remember I gave up very early on Fate Go, mostly because I didn't want to invest the time that Andrew did. There was no way I was going to invest that kind of time into that game. It just, and because of that, I became, I don't want to say level gated, but I became mechanic gated. And I, like I said, I wasn't going to take the time to figure all that crap out. And so I ended up just kind of dinking around here and there. I'd get something, and then I didn't either hand it over to Andrew and let Andrew do the entire event because I wasn't going to bother with
it. So I was doing the event twice every time. And I'm like, I kind of like him playing the game. It's not like I need him playing the game just to like feel like we're doing something together. But it's like, I almost feel like obligated to do that just because I don't want him to quit, even though I don't want him to play it because I know he's frustrated by it.
And now Genshin, on the other hand, I feel almost the same way, but not in the same, to the same extent, mostly because I've gotten to the point where I'm enjoying the game so much that I am taking the time to kind of try to learn the mechanics. And so I'm doing okay. And I'm starting to get to the point where I'm not going to say I'm as good as Andrew is, but I'm getting to the point where I can probably keep up with Andrew. I'm now able to solo most pretty much everything. And the only thing that I can see right now that I'm having a hard time with is that big old Geo boss that he just, oh my gosh, he's insane. But I can solo him technically. So it's kind of funny in that respect.
Yeah, you can solo him because then you can actually use Zhongli and I'm not using up Zhongli's slot.
In some respects, I am having fun with it. But on the other hand, it is kind of one of those things is like, I absolutely despise how time-gated Genshin Impact is. Like Andrew was kind of mentioning it, Genshin almost doesn't want you to play. And it's like, as backwards thinking,
it's like
you've
spent your money that you need to spend to get the character, now get off the server so we don't have to run too many servers. It feels like that. It feels like they're literally trying to just keep you off servers.
Yeah, and the funny thing is it's brilliant if you think about it as backwards thinking as it is. It's kind of one of those things that forces you to not get bored of things.
Right.
And
they don't want you to burn out. They don't want you to complete everything and then walk away.
Exactly. It's so funny. And I hate it in that respect. But at the same time, you have to almost give it credit for what it's doing in the forcing people to keep coming back every day.
Yeah, and it's funny because I do think that right now where I'm at, I like the limitations of Genshin right now. Like, if I like the fact that I can pop in there, play for 30 to an hour, get what I need to get done, maybe do a little extra with some, you know, searching for treasures on the side, because I actually have stuff on the side to do for once, because we have any Inazuma. But with everything else going on with, you know, right now I'm currently trying to binge through Higurashi, the old series. Having that just to kind of pop in, do it really quickly, and turn it off is great. So having Fate Grand Order right now, where I'm like literally having to just slog at it, it's really refreshing. So yeah, I agree with you. I think it's something that they did on purpose, obviously, but at the same time, I probably get to a point here eventually where I'll have nothing to do in Genshin again, because I'll eventually finish Inazuma, and I'm assuming the next zone is not going to be for another, what, 2 years probably. We'll see. We'll see if they can possibly use some of that money to actually produce areas quicker.
It is interesting to see. I wonder if they're going to wait until after Yo-Yo Mia's...
Yo-Yo Mia?
Yeah.
Yo-Yo Mia. Yo-Mia.
After her banner, or if they're going to wait, you know, another two patches to get to this second part of Inazuma.
It'll probably be once the banner for the Shogun comes out, which will be after hers. It seems like they're really slowly gating out that whole story. So, makes sense. But at the same time, it kind of sucks because there's a lot of stuff that I can't unlock because it's all being gated by that time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, based on, like, all the stuff that is, like, the tree that you're kind of refreshing and all that kind of stuff, the sigils that you have to get, there's a lot of stuff that just is not out on the map yet.
Right.
So, it'll be interesting how long it takes to get all that stuff out. But yeah, that's what's going on. Like I said, hitting on Higurashi. I'm actually running into a lot of stuff in Higurashi that I don't remember. Like, I'm finally getting to stuff where it's like, I think I remember this whole story part. And it was funny because it wasn't until, like, it's not until probably halfway through the second season that it finally reveals a certain key element of the story that I was, like, pretty positive on. And so it's like halfway through the second season, which is literally probably almost three quarters through the entire series of the old series, I was starting to think, like, am I just misremembering this? There's this one key element of the story that I'm pretty sure is, you know, a thing. And then, like, finally they reveal it. I'm like, God, I don't remember it taking this long for them to get into this. But yeah, I'm enjoying it, even though it's unsettling to watch, of course. It's so funny with all the gruesome things that happen in that show. What is the one that is the most unsettling?
Between the nails and the knife.
Nails.
The nails and the knife are the two that stand,
like, it doesn't really show the knife thing. Like, it does, but it's not at.
No, it was a shadow,
so
wasn't
weird
it?
That, no, you just see, like, usually kind of popping back and forth between the two, but you're not, like, seeing the knife go in.
Yeah.
Like, if they showed, like, an angle where it's literally going into the head, but I think that would be more unsettling. But yeah, having to see, like, the hand there and the fingernail, like, halfway peeled because you did it wrong. It's like, oh my gosh, why is this so painful to watch?
Well,
compared
I've always
to everything else.
It's funny because my nails have been a thing for me. I remember The Ring has a nail scene in that, and it was like, I don't know why that gets to me so much.
Yeah, and then the neck clawing is very unsettling too. Like, just the idea of somebody clawing their own neck is just kind of unsettling too, but which includes fingernails, so maybe it's just a fingernail thing. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. Looking forward. I was thinking about doing, like, a video on just the original series and then doing a video on the Kai series, but after watching the original series, I'm like, it's odd. It doesn't answer really anything in that first season, really. So
I
technically have to get into the second season just to have something to talk about.
Yeah, I was when we were talking about it that one day, I do remember us talking back and forth about how long it took before they actually revealed a lot of that stuff. And I was also thinking about the detective part of it, and I wasn't sure which one had actually done certain reveals.
It was funny because I thought that there was more to the whole, like, detective segment where, like, the adults are looking into things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one episode. I was like, I don't remember this being that quick. Like, it literally is one episode, and then boom, we're moving back to the kids, and she's trying to figure out a way of getting out of it. And I'm like, okay, I thought this went on a lot longer than that. I thought it was, I thought Kai, I, my remembering of it, I thought Kai was literally just detective time and all the kids were dead pretty much. But it's very weird, very weird. My memory of things is it's extremely skewed when it comes to Higurashi, I guess. But yeah, that's, I guess I can get into it now, but, I'm kind of happy that I'm getting into it, and I'm not going to wait until the series is done, because apparently the actual production committee has officially announced on Twitter for people to watch out for spoilers, because apparently somebody has leaked spoilers for Sutsu, which is the currently airing Higurashi series, online. So there's spoilers out there, so if you are a fan of Higurashi or you're just planning on watching it, be careful, because there's spoilers out there. Some in some way, shape, or form, there's spoilers out there. I don't know what it is. I don't care to know. I'll probably look into what was spoiled when I actually get done. But I still have, like, I don't know, probably 12 episodes of Kai, and then I have the 6 episode OVA, and then I'll get on the first new one, Go, and then Satsu. So fun stuff. Fun stuff.
Yeah, it's one of those seeing the thing from my room. Andrew's TV reflects into his cabinets, and I can see it right there at my desk, so it's kind of frustrating to keep glancing over there and seeing stuff going on, and I've thought about closing my door quite a few times, but it's one of those things.
Death and screaming every 2 seconds. I bet it's so much fun in the house.
I don't deny the almost, I kind of want to go back and watch it again, but at the same time, it's just such a dark show. It really is.
Yep. Very, very dark. We should probably get into the rest of the news, which is probably the biggest news. I was actually thinking of having us just open up with this, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that don't normally listen to us that want to hear this whole segment. I've already done a video on this, but I wanted to do this again here with Chris, because obviously a lot of people want to hear Chris's opinion on this, and I'm sure Chris loves talking about this. But yes, for some time we have been discussing in several podcasts about essentially Sony Global Group buying Crunchyroll, which they've already bought. They were already a part of Aniplex, or Aniplex was a segment of them. And they recently, a few years ago now, they bought Funimation. And now, like, I think late last year, they were in talks to buy Crunchyroll. And obviously, this has been long delayed. Shoot, we're now almost a year since then, because apparently the government agreed with us in the idea that it was going to create a monopoly. So it was on hold for quite a long time. But apparently now, officially, as of yesterday, August 9th, of 2021, they have come out and announced that, yes, Sony has bought Crunchyroll, and it is a thing. So, yay! the press release is that Sony Pictures Entertainment and AT&T today announced that SPE, Sony Pictures Entertainment, completed its acquisition of AT&T's Crunchyroll anime business through Funimation Global Group, LLC. Funimation is a joint venture between Sony SPE and Sony Music Entertainment, subsidiaries Aniplex Inc. The agreement was first announced in December 2020. Crunchyroll is a premier anime direct to consumer service with I don't care about all this stuff. Flex. We are very excited to welcome Crunchyroll and Sony Group. Kenshiro Yoshida said, who's the president and CEO and chairman of Sony Group Corporation. Anime is a rapidly growing medium and enthralls emotion amongst audience around the globe. The alignment of Crunchyroll and Funimation will enable us to get even closer to creators and fans who are at the heart of the anime community. We look forward to delivering even more outstanding entertainment that fills the world with emotion through anime. There was some other stuff. They pretty much point out the idea that they are planning eventually to unify these subscriptions. You ever hear, our goal is to create a unified anime subscription experience as soon as possible. So at the current time, they will be keeping the two entities separate, which we mentioned before is going to be a thing, that they will keep the two separate, and this could be many different reasons. One being they don't want to jostle the current subscriptions, because if suddenly they merged, they would lose a lot of subscriptions. And also the idea that there is from what I understand, there is contracts that actually specify certain platforms. So if they were to remove Crunchyroll, say, there's going to be a lot of titles that they would not be able to transition over to Funimation because they're technically supposed to be for be on Crunchyroll platform. So it'll probably take some time. But yeah, what's your initial thought when I texted you? It finally happened, Chris. It actually happened. For some reason, the government did not see that buying this was going to create a monopoly. Apparently, they think, I don't know, Netflix is a competition. They think High Dive is competition to Sony. I don't know.
I looked at the text. I said, huh. And then I moved on with what I was doing. I'm sorry. It's one of those things. It's like, if you didn't see it coming, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, you would hope that it was, but Sony's huge. You think that they're not going to have the connections to get this pushed through?
Yeah, it was something that was in the back of my head yesterday. I'm like, I hate to think that, but you know, it probably happened that way. Somebody patted somebody's pocket and they're like, oh, you know what? That isn't a monopoly. It actually isn't a monopoly. You know, there is that Netflix place, that place that probably has
exactly.
one or two
and
shows,
you know,
per season. They're definitely, Netflix can definitely get out there and buy.
You know,
all
that
these
is
shows.
Exactly the argument that they made. They said Netflix has anime, they have Amazon has anime. Those two
yeah,
are
still
bigger
have,
than
they
us.
They have Evangelion coming out soon. My son said Evangelion's going to be on Amazon Prime here soon. That's seasonal anime. It's like it is so easy to make the counter argument. Like if I went into that like board, that meeting that they had on deciding if this is a monopoly, I would just bring up a chart and say, okay, here is the last 5 seasons. Let's see who has licensed which shows in each season. Looks like 99% of all shows each season is going to either Crunchyroll or Funimation. Would this create a monopoly? Tapping cheek. I don't know. What do you guys think?
High Dive has
shows.
High
Dive down here. They got one. They got one.
And Netflix and Amazon are bigger than us, and they've got anime.
Yeah, look, Netflix is a big company. They can compete. And it's like it's that argument of, again, Netflix isn't necessarily a competitor. Netflix is like the Nintendo of the consoles. They just don't care about anybody else. They just do their own thing.
Yeah,
that's always been what, well, not always what Netflix has done, but there's very few times where Netflix is like, oh, we're going to get Seven Deadly Sins 2. Oh, we're going to get Eden Zero. But the most part, there's stuff they're doing themselves. They don't care about the market.
Yeah.
They're putting money into anime to have their own stuff so that nobody else can license it. So it's, I don't know. It's unfortunate. I really don't like this. And I know that's probably going to burn some bridges for us, but I'm sure we probably burnt enough bridges for Sony and Funimation in general. As much as I love Crunchyroll and I've always supported them, and I still know a lot of people that work with that company, I wish them the best. And I'm sure for the next year or so, they're still going to be in a separate entity and working fine. But as like I said before, my own experience with these kind of buys, it's only a matter of time. Like I was telling somebody, it's like it's one of those weird things. And this is just pure speculation, but there's just one of those weird things. When a big company buys somebody else, eventually down the road, there's this branding thing that marketing and stuff loves to do. They don't like the name of something that somebody else made. It's like somebody else's legacy. So like 2 years down the road, they're going to go, I don't like that Crunchyroll name. We didn't make it up. We need to change this to something that we think is cool, that people are going to like. This reinvigoration of this brand, we're going to make it something else. We're going to make it something that we want. I'm surprised they've had Funimation for as long as they had. I would assume by now that they would start looking into changing Funimation's name. But it's probably because they started talking about buying Crunchyroll too and just doing it at the same time. But I do think they're going to keep the Crunchyroll name around for a while because Crunchyroll has a lot of subscribers. It is literally their brand recognition. I wouldn't doubt that, and this would be my suggestion to Sony, because you know what they're going to do. They're eventually going to take this and put it into their other platforms. Because one of the other branches of Sony Group is obviously the PlayStation brands. And they're going to want to start shuffling all of that anime into that brand. And I think they should keep the Crunchyroll name. But eventually they're going to make Sony anime. And then they're going to plug all that into there.
I think that you're actually right. That's an interesting concept to think, could, because of the flack that Funimation has, I could see a viable option to have Crunchyroll eat Funimation. That's an interesting thought. Now, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think it would probably be more viable to just go Sony Anime and just be done with it, because Sony is technically known for entertainment in a lot of cases. Yes, they're old Sony is hardware, but pretty much now Sony is entertainment. So it's I could see them doing the whole Sony Anime thing, but having Crunchyroll as just a moniker is probably a bit more viable. And when you think about it, unless you're a hardcore dub fanatic, you know Crunchyroll.
Yeah, right? That's the funny thing. It's like I say that, but at the same time, who does most like very much, yeah, either dub fans or people that just don't really keep track of anime, like the Dragon Ball fans, they probably just know Funimation. That's yeah. Like that's all they've known. And so it's like how do you gauge that difference when you have the fandom of that it is Dragon Ball, which is millions, or just the fans of Crunchyroll? It's like I would assume that probably the amount of people that watch and consume Dragon Ball alone is probably much more than who even subscribes to Crunchyroll. But I could be wrong. My hope is that you will have the Crunchyroll platform stay up as it is now, so you can go onto your Apple TV or whatever, your Roku, and go to the Crunchyroll app just to get anime. And Funimation would probably become a part of that, just kind of just absorb it. Because I do like those platforms better than the Funimation ones, easily. Their press release was literally down for maintenance because they released the press and they couldn't handle it. Which makes sense. Most people that aren't even going there for anime is going to be viewing that. But then, yeah, you do have, because I know that putting a Crunchyroll logo on, say, PlayStation 4 is going to confuse people. What is a Crunchyroll? They'll probably want it to say something like Sony Anime or something like that. It's probably just going to be into their usual video streaming catalog, not even have an icon. But have it just kind of plug into it. But the entity that is Crunchyroll, stay it what it is. It's just the content of it goes into some other service on the Sony platform. Because you're going to want to keep that brand recognition and that thing separate. I don't want to have to download a Sony app on my computer just to run and go and search for. I don't want to have the Amazon Prime experience where I'm looking for my anime somewhere hidden inside there. I like just to go to Crunchyroll and I get nothing but my anime. But, you know, like I said, marketing people love to have their own little logo that they created. They're so special. This is ours. We made this cute little logo. I hate marketing people. I've dealt with marketing people for a long time. No disrespect for my old marketing friends. Just in general, I guess.
Now, I've mentioned this before, but just to reiterate, I've been with Crunchyroll a very long time. Before they went legit, I've been following them all the way through all these 15 years now. I really, really do love Crunchyroll. For our bickering differences on what they do here and there, that's all aside from the point. It's you're probably harshest on the things that you love. And
yeah,
it's I do have a lot of love for Crunchyroll. They've moved their place in my heart and will probably stay there forever. 20 years down the road, when Sony completely takes over everything and we're all living under Sony's rule and worshiping at the altar of Sony, I will still go back and nostalgically think on my days at watching Crunchyroll and streaming at 240p, because that was the days. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to it, In some respects, this is a good thing, and in some respects, this is a bad thing. So take it for what it is. It's an equal balance in some respects. Mostly on the aspect of having everything in one centralized location is a good thing. So the a la carte of everything in one place, you don't have to have four different subscriptions, although they'll probably do some weird thing like that where they're going to try and do that. Maybe they'll try and buy out Viz at some point, and then you'll have all your manga in one place, and everything will be in one subscription, and it'll be $150. It'll be perfect. It'll be perfect. Wonderful.
This is what you want, right? We did it, guys. We got it all in one place for you. Only $9.99 a month.
With my underhanded critiques aside, yes, in a lot of cases, it'll be good. Having all that money in one place will be good for the market. On the downside, they're going to try to figure out a subscription model that will try to both cater to you and suck as much money. Suck as much money is a bad word for it. Companies don't like leaving money on the table. That's a term that is for if your customer is willing to pay more for something, you have to figure out how to get that money from them. It's not necessarily, in some cases, yes, it's taking advantage of the customer. In other cases, it's also an idea that is behind the idea of you don't want to leave a need uncared for. And so that's where that kind of idea is. You don't want to leave.
If you can provide a service and make more money, why not?
Yes. And that's the problem is where it goes from leaving the money on the table to predatory is a very fine line.
Yeah.
I think Genshin Impact is very predatory. I'm not even going to dismiss that in any way, shape, or form. As much as we fondly
anything
talk
with the gacha system is predatory.
Yeah, it's very predatory.
At least you know what you're getting. Pay it and you get it.
You're going into that fully aware of what you're doing. But this is in a different animal in some cases because of like we were saying, we've talked about this several times of the gatekeeping. And that is the one thing that bugs the crap out of me is now literally everything except for one or two anime that you find from Netflix and one or two anime that's on Amazon, which is technically not even trying to do current stuff.
Don't forget High Dive. We gotta mention High Dive. Support High Dive.
I think that everybody needs to just flock over to High Dive and tell them, please get into this.
Inject them with a whole bunch of subscriptions right now so they can build up that platform.
But what it is now literally, with all of our complaints of Funimation, we've always said, but now we have, at least we have Crunchyroll as an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Now we don't. So literally all of your beefs with Funimation are going to be magnified because literally they're the only ones. And as much as we have sat here and said, don't do any pirating, now it's like, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
At this point, and I'm not saying pirating is good. I'm saying at this point, what else can you do?
I'll make an argument here soon that it's going to be, if you pirate, don't think this doesn't affect you. But I was going to wait till you're done. So, yeah, to get into my fears of this whole situation, because I do want it to be a good thing. I honestly do. Combining subscriptions are, I mean, there's the joke argument that you can be made that they'll probably want to keep this separate as long as possible. That way they get two different subscriptions. There's no rush for them to bring them together. The only thing that's going to rush to bring it together is to go, well, technically Hulu and Netflix, how much do they make per month? They're like, $15 subscriptions. If we can combine these, that would be the excuse that we need to bump it up to 15.
I think what they'll do is now that both platforms, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think what they'll do is, they will, since now they own both platforms, eventually you'll see both of them get completely to where literally everything is on both platforms. And then the subscriptions will separate naturally. And then it'll be obvious that there is no more, you're not getting any more on this side or any more on this side. And then it'll be a natural combination.
Right. Because they're going to have those contracts for each of those shows. Anything they're going to be licensing going forward is going to probably be streamable on Sony Global Corp platforms.
Right.
So that way, there's no argument of them putting on either one of those two platforms. Like I said, if that's true, this is something that I've heard at some point, that this was a thing that actually is a that they do. So,
because right now you're literally paying for two subscriptions because one platform has this many anime and this platform has this many anime, and eventually all the dub people will only be subscribing to Funimation. Only the people who want subs are going to Crunchyroll.
And wouldn't it be funny if they did that? It's like Funimation is nothing but dub,
yeah,
and Crunchyroll's nothing but sub. They literally divide the community. But no, that, I mean, that was a good example. There is Aniplex titles. It's taken them forever to get everything on Funimation. Like, because that was the thing when they first bought Funimation, it was the talk of, like, now all the Aniplex titles are going to get pulled from Crunchyroll, and they're going to go to Funimation. And they're still doing that. They're still getting titles on there. So it's not a quick move thing. But yeah, that was the thing. When they bought, technically when Sony bought Funimation, because somebody brought this up in the comments of my video, honestly, we weren't technically that afraid of Sony buying Funimation. Because at the time, it wasn't really... We knew that Sony was part of Aniplex, and we knew that Aniplex had a lot of risky stuff in it. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, well, maybe this branch of Sony just doesn't really care about that kind of stuff, is censoring everything. Maybe this is different. But it was that point in which we started talking about things like the Singa Kagura writer essentially being pushed off the Sony platform on the SEI side of Sony. I want to make sure I specify this because somebody did bring this up in the comments. That technically the side that owns PlayStation is a different branch than the side that is Sony Pictures. These are all different branches of Sony Group. So, yeah, technically the whole conversation about Sony PlayStation's platform, Sony SEI coming to America and their headquarters going to California, and all these people in there censoring the crap out of everything on the PlayStation platform that's not super violent, because shooting people in the head with guns is perfectly fine. You don't need to censor that stuff because that stuff makes them lots of money. It's those anime booby games. We need to get rid of those. Those are unacceptable on our platform. But we didn't think that it was going to be necessarily affecting things on Funimation's platform when Sony bought them, because, again, we knew what Aniplex had. It wasn't until, like, here recently where we've pretty much established that PlayStation as a platform is a censorship garbage can, as much as I love a lot of the games on there. Where at the same time, Funimation started showing signs of it. They started putting, different dubs and stuff within their context and changing the meaning of what the characters are saying. But at some point, what happened? Interspecies Reviewers. It was a big warning sign. That show was a big warning sign of what's to come. I think Interspecies Reviewers was the first primary example that I've seen of the new Funimation, of the new Sony Group Funimation. And that's where my fear comes in. Personally, I have nothing to substantiate this but based on past experience. And a lot of that experience is through the PlayStation platform, which, again, I acknowledge is a different branch of Sony Group. Which does beg the question, how high up in that Sony branch, is it in the Sony Group Corp that change of the PlayStation platform came from? Because then it will trickle down into the Sony picture side of things, into Funimation, into Crunchyroll, which is this idea of censoring things to make it more acceptable for a worldwide audience, which is the main crux of my fear. It is definitely in this creating a monopoly, but it's in that monopoly that the terrifying things come from. One being that anything coming to the West has to go through Sony Group, has to go through Sony Pictures. And they, based on them being the only platform, the biggest platform, can start making requests. Not demands yet. I'll just say requests. They can say, hey, this anime is a bit too much for us. Can you tone down this a little bit? And they go, we could probably change it a little bit and people over here will be fine with it. So let's do that. Yeah, I mean, why not? They're giving us a lot of money to stream their stuff over there, we might as well make it to where they can accept it too. And then you start getting those little changes. Because why? Who else is going to buy the title? High Dive's over here just begging for something. You have Netflix over here going, I don't care. We're making our own stuff over here. We don't care. Amazon's over here going, we've been done for several years. We're just getting Evangelion. We'll be out of your way in a second. We bought this earlier. We're just getting this and getting out of the way. It is that, again, I hate to say the term, but it's gatekeeping. They're going to be the gatekeeper. They're going to be the ones. If you want to get over the bridge over to the West, we're the only ones you got. We're called Sony, and you have to choose. And that's where I said, if you're a pirater, because that was the thing that you see on all these kinds of posts. Well, I'm glad I'm a pirater. I don't care about any of this. You should, because this is going to start altering the stuff before it even gets to you.
That's true.
And that's the problem. If you're a pirater, this does technically affect you. And that was what I was my key thing when I posted on Twitter. I said, you know, I was going to make a video talking about my thoughts on this. I'm being super doomed. I'm usually a half glass full person. You know me. I usually look at everything from a positive side. But this one I can't. I don't see any positives besides, yeah, you're subscribing to one less thing. It's probably going to cost more, but you're going to have one less charge on your card every month, I guess. It's still going to cost just as much. I think once they merge, there's no way, shape, or form they're not going to bump up the price to equate it. If you pay $6 a month from two different sources, if they were to merge, you're paying $12. Make no doubt about it. There's no way they're not going to do that. So I want to look at this in a positive light. I hope this makes it to where more people get stuff. I hope this means that more titles will get physical releases for people. I hope that this means that the price of subscription is going to be less. I hope this means that Funimation will stop using their platform and they'll just move everything to Crunchyroll's platform, because I hate Funimation's platform more than Crunchyroll's platform. I hope this means that they will have more money to give to upgrading their stuff, because we all know when there's no competition, companies love to improve their apps. They love to improve their platforms because they're afraid of somebody else coming in and stealing the light. I'm being completely sarcastic there. I'm trying to see positive. Sarcastically going back into negative.
That was no more worse than my $150 subscription.
Underhanded jab. Like, isn't this great? Punch. What? Do you feel a punch in your stomach? No. It's hard to see the positives in this. I will say, the other thing that I noted on Twitter immediately after I pretty much told people that I was going to make a video, now more than ever is it extremely important. And this is not to say that you're going to get something out of this. I'm not going to claim that you're going to get a great title that you're going to love. I can't guarantee you anything by doing this. But I can say, in order to help with the future of anime streaming, now more than ever, it is important to support other services. And unfortunately, the only one that right now for current anime is High Dive. So research, see if it's got titles that you want and it's something you want to invest in. But I would recommend it, because now more than ever, it's important for us to support them, because 6 months down the road, it's not going to be quick. It's not going to be like suddenly, unless everybody like suddenly out of nowhere just injects a whole bunch of subscriptions into them. It's not going to be quick, but I'm hoping that eventually, if people do support High Dive, in a year, it'll be which half of the anime is going to be on High Dive and which half is going to be on Sunimation roll. Mm-hmm. That's my hope, because like I said, we need competition in the sphere. It's very important. As much as I would love to say this is going to be a great thing and down the road everything's going to be perfect and it's going to be one company that's going to be charging us $2 a month for all the anime every season, sub and dub, HD quality, perfect apps. It's just unfortunately not the reality of the world. As much as we don't like it, it's the reality of the world. That's what non-competition breeds. And it's been something that's been proven for generations and generations. So, yeah.
I wonder how... You bring up a good point, which is
I do that a lot.
You don't think about the fact that what will end up happening later is Sony or Funimation or Crunchyroll them going to the producer and saying, because what will end up happening is at some point people are going to have, there's going to be the anime that is going to be a very beloved story. It'll get an adaptation. People are going to watch it. They're going to backlash on Crunchyroll, Funimation, Sony for changing something up. And it's going to be so massive and so blatant that it's going to be so obvious that Funimation did it. Crunchyroll, Sony.
Yeah, it'll probably be like a Sword Art Online with the recent season. It'll probably be a situation like that where you did have that one scene where those girls were being obviously forced upon. It'll be something like that.
Yeah, it'll be
one of those things where you like you can't technically argue it because you're like, yeah, that's technically a really terrible situation in that scene, but it shouldn't be removed because it's a part of the story.
Yeah, and it's going to be like I said, it's going to be
probably be our fault because somebody will be like, this is a terrible scene. Why would you have something like this on this show? I'm so traumatized, and then they'll for then on will have to change it because somebody said something.
But what I'm getting ready to say is it'll be so blatant, so obvious that everybody's going to say, look, we know you did it, because they're not going to be able to blame the producers. They're not going to be able to blame the writer. They're going to have to take full responsibility for that change. It's going to be at their doorstep. Now, this is what that'll do is it'll force them to go to the producer and say, look, we cannot sell this to the customer if you have it here in the Japanese market this way, and then we're trying to put it out here on the Western side. Now, what's interesting is that will force, like Andrew was saying, them do it before they get it. Now, what's interesting about that is what'll end up happening is now the producers are the ones that are taking the blame. There's an interesting conundrum in that situation, because what will end up happening at that point, just like you were mentioning with the Senran Kagura developer, he's like, I'm not even going to bother with this, because what's the point? Y'all are making me change it when this is what it is. It's always been this way. Why are you making me change it? Then your manga is going to start changing just so that it can be in the Western audience. This is so frustrating, because what did I tell you all 5 years ago? This crap has got to stop. These people are affecting what we are going to the Japanese audience for, or the Japanese market for. We want different stories. And now your freaking stuff that's being happening in the Western audience or Western fandoms are now affecting our fandom. It's now affecting our market. The stuff that we want. We left this Western market for a reason. Why? Because we don't like this stuff. We came over here, and now they're slowly starting to affect it.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to note. Now, I think this could be one of those things where you'll probably see. My assumption that would happen is, yeah, it's going to be one of those things where they're going to go, well, we don't want to have to create two different versions of this. So like I said earlier, it's going to be one of those things where you just, let's alter this a little bit so that Sony's going to be happy with this, and we can still release it on television here. It actually makes it easier for us because we don't have to worry about that. But again, they're going to have that backlash. And I'm wondering if it's going to be one of those things where they'll just kind of go, don't worry over here. We'll put on the Blu-ray. So you can have it on the Blu-ray. But all broadcast is going to be this one thing. And yeah, I can see that being the case where they go, look, you can't have another version of it broadcast here. And they're like, well, we're giving you the censored version. Don't worry about it. You're getting a version. It's just, you know, we want to keep this stuff out of it for you. And they're like, no. Because people are going to now go around and watch this stuff, the Japanese version, quote-unquote, on other services, and we can't have that. Well, okay, then it comes to the aspect of, are they going to nail down on piracy more? No, they're going to probably say, no, just change it to where there's no reason for them to go around the market. They'll come to us because we're going to have the same version. It's just something that's going to happen eventually, and it's unfortunate, because again, we've noted before that technically the Western market isn't like, you know, the biggest number maker for them, but it still is. If you look at the numbers for how much is injected just by licensing alone, Japan loves it. The studios love it. They're making so much money having, like, whereas before they had to wait until a show like completely finished and they then start licensing out the actual the show for distributors to release in the West. Now they're literally, before they even start animating, they're getting a huge injection of money from the West. They love it. It's great. They're like, they haven't even produced anything yet. What they could produce could end up being garbage, but they're already making a whole bunch of money already just based on, I'm trying to pull it up right now because there's like a percentage of it is like streaming and stuff, but it's nothing to really gawk at. We've said several times before that there is technically the aspect of, you know, a lot of their money is in music because, again, a lot of this stuff is technically advertisement for mangas. It's advertisement for, as much as we joke about it and talk about it, Grimgar Fantasy Ash was a huge record label advertisement. It was a fantastic one because I love the music, but it is something that they can't technically deny is how much they get injected by just there's distribution by internet. See if it has the percentages of it. I looked at the. I know we talked about it before on one of our podcasts, and I had the numbers available, but it's not anything to gawk at. They are making a lot of money from streaming, so it's one of those things where it's not everything of Japan. Like, they're not going, oh, it looks like 100% of our revenue is going to come from Sony now from the West. No, it's literally, here's a huge chunk that they can't ignore is significant, and they may decide to alter things just for that. Now, again, that goes back to my hope is the idea of, my hope in a market would be, and this is something that technically can't, this is a positive that can happen that I think will help High Dive. Let me end this on a positive note. I like that. So here's my hope again, that people support companies like High Dive and keep them breathing, because granted, necessarily right now, a lot of stuff that is High Dive is going to fall off of Crunchyroll. They have, I finally found a note. I wasn't sure of this yesterday. If you look in the press release way under the about Crunchyroll, it finally acknowledges VRV. So VRV is a part of this acquisition based on this press release that they bought Crunchyroll and that VRV was a part of Crunchyroll. I always was under the understanding that Otter Media owned VRV and Crunchyroll, and they were separate entities, but apparently they are one. So, that means, what is one of the main ways that people get High Dive stuff, and it's how we did it, was we went to VRV to view it. That's not going to happen anymore. They're probably going to kick High Dive or Sentai Filmworks stuff off of VRV. And so the only way you're going to get it is going directly to High Dive. And I think it's good to support them, because my hope is that people will support companies like High Dive. And eventually what's going to happen is Sony as a group, let's just call them Sony, not Crunchyroll, Funimation, just Sony, starts licensing stuff in the future, and that they mess up a little bit. They go, hey, what's up? You got some new titles next season? I don't see anybody else around here. Let's give you half of what we normally do. And they're like, well, there's nobody else to buy it, so I guess sure. Crap, they're not going to pay us as much anymore because there's only one company. That's what happens in a situation like this. Is there's no longer a bidding war between Crunchyroll and Funimation and Sony. They're no longer bidding stuff up. They're no longer saying, we'll give you $2,000 or we'll give you $2,500. It's now one company thinking that they're the only boss on the street, and they come in and they go, I'll give you like $500 per episode. Nobody else is going to buy it. Who cares? And they'll go with it. And then eventually, High Dive gets ear of that. And they come in and they go, did you just sell that for $500? Next season, I'll give you $1,000. And then, bam, High Dive's in there. They suddenly have a whole bunch of titles in one season, and suddenly everybody's subscribing to them. It injects into them, and they suddenly become the competitor. That is my big hope right now, is that the bidding wars will stop. It will bring the cost down. That's unfortunate because that means that the anime studios are getting less, not necessarily anime studios, but the, you know, production committee. They're getting a lot of money. it does mean the anime industry is getting less money, but I think in the long run that will mean, and that might cause a problem with production for a while, but they'll have that, you know, that injection of an alternative very quickly because somebody's going to snipe in there. Hey, maybe Amazon might see this as an opportunity. Hey, the price is going to come down on anime. We should probably get in there and get some titles. And maybe Amazon will give us another shot.
Next time,
Amazon, just make a separate subscription. Don't screw it up this time.
It'll be interesting to see how the war, if a war starts between High Dive and them, it's because what we can hope for the most is that, as harsh as it sounds, Sony falls flat on their face for a second. They trip and they, like Andrew was saying, they screw up for a minute and High Dive comes in, because what would end up happening is a natural mass exodus will happen and they'll all go flock to whoever has the most anime that season.
Mm-hmm.
So you would hope that they'd be able to...
I would love a future
to-
where we talk about there's a... Because like we've talked to death about, like, you know, Crunchyroll getting up to like 4 million subscriptions. I would love to have a press release suddenly out of nowhere and we're talking on the podcast going... Hey, High Dive just hit 1 million subscribers. Yeah. That's great. It's huge for them.
And you could only hope that something like that would happen, because what you have right now is, because High Dive is in a very vulnerable position, period.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do outbid them as it stands right now. Sony's pockets are too deep. There's just no way.
Yeah, we talked about that with the, you know, Amazon postmortem when we did that whole thing.
Yeah. And so you would hope that they do something flagrantly obvious that way, that they say, look, we're only going to give you the 250 per episode. And High Dive swipes in, and although they don't have a lot of monetization to work with, they can at least have enough that they can
invest.
Just fight for one season, and everybody moves over, and then we have the two competitors right.
And there's a good point to make, and I don't want to forget this. So I'm sorry to kind of jump in here. It is very important. Now there is a grace period with this whole situation. I'm not going to say forever. Keep in mind, High Dive is not a big company in regards to streaming. So if you do. If my voice does get out there and a lot of people do start supporting High Dive and you start spreading the word to people to support High Dive, give them time. Because what is the worst thing that happens with a streaming company is when they get an injection of growth of subscribers, they have to adjust to it. So if somehow my word gets out there, a lot of people's word gets out there to support High Dive, and suddenly out of nowhere, you know, stream buffering happens and they have server problems – give them time. Don't just immediately cut and run. Because that's what happens every time somebody tries to find an alternative to YouTube.
Yeah.
Is they rush to another company, and what happens? Sites crashing, maintenance, issues. Because they're trying to grow. And people don't give the alternatives enough time to adjust, to increase their server infrastructure, to account for this. And people run and they leave. And that's not to say, you know, if it takes them 2 months and they're still having problems on a daily basis to just still give them a pass, you know, speak out, tell them, look, I'm trying to support you, please improve your stuff. But it's something that you have to give time to grow.
Yeah. And that's what every one of them, I was getting ready to say the same thing about YouTube. It's every one of these companies who's tried to the Rumbles, the BitChute, the all these other companies who've tried to actually start a new service after, Vivo kind of went through the same thing. Was it Vivo?
Vivo, yeah. Is it Vivo? I think it was Vivo.
They
Vimeo.
Tried.
Wasn't Vimeo?
Vimeo?
Yeah, Vimeo. Okay.
They tried to do the same thing. Every one of these companies who try to do the alternative to YouTube, they all end up in the same situation where they're not ready for the mass exodus.
And it's
that
always
comes over to them.
Yeah, it's always these big, huge bundles of people that just like a controversy happens and they go, let's go to here. And it's just like, holy crap, hold on. We got to adjust things. And then by the time we got to adjust, and they look up and everybody's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. It's like they don't give enough time to adjust.
Yeah.
They can't foresee these kind of things. And they can't adjust beforehand because it costs a lot of money.
Well,
they have to see the audience before they can adjust, because it costs so much.
Final Fantasy's going through this right now at the same time, and they're working on adjusting things, but they went through the exact same thing. And this, we're talking about I'm not going to say a massive company, but it's not a tiny company. This is Square Enix. Square Enix is big.
They're probably their online side of things is probably the more smaller side of them, but they still pulled off it really well.
And they were able to take the hit. It was a little bit rough for a few days, but they were able to eventually, you know, smooth things out.
For some servers. I feel bad for Cactuar.
but it goes to show you, if you give these companies time to work with it, they want your custom. So it's not like they're doing it. They're going, oh, well, you guys crashed our servers and screw you. We don't want you.
It's your fault. You're the one that logged in. You broke it.
Could you imagine one of these companies actually doing that?
Well, there's a lot of companies like, well, I can see Sony doing that at this point. What, you want Crunchyroll to work? Well, stop logging in.
It's one of those things that if you're patient with them, they'll do it. They're going to the frustration is they have to have their server level at the level of their budget, and servers cost gobs of money. It's not something that's cheap. Plus, on top of that, they have to have infrastructure. Mm-hmm. What is one of the main reasons why Netflix has such a monopoly on just movie streaming in general is they have the infrastructure. What do I mean by infrastructure?
However long that'll last. Netflix has fallen quite a bit.
They have basically, I don't know how to explain it, but they have these access points that are kind of a, if you know how torrenting works, it's similar to that.
Yeah.
Where they have almost like a, if they know a movie is going to be hot, they will make almost a copy of it at each one of these little server farms all around the world. Yeah, they're kind of like hubs, but they're not hubs.
Every time that you go to some site or something like that, you're going through hubs. And if they can put that as close to you as possible, it makes it very easy.
No, not hubs in the respect of like routers or like I'm talking server farms all over the world.
Yeah.
Similar to the servers on your MMOs, where you'll have a server in this area, in this region, and you'll have a server in this region. Yes, you can go to the other server, but you're going to have bad bandwidth. If you go to the server that's closest to you, you're going to have better bandwidth. They do something similar with almost like copies of their movies. Yes, you can get a movie from like 20 years ago, and it might download a little bit faster, unless they move it over to one of their other servers, which has a faster
their whole thing is like the moment that you press that button, something should come up on your screen, because if you wait 2 seconds, you're gonna give up. You're gonna turn it off. It's like I didn't care about it that much. They want it like literally right now, the way they have it set up, you're literally scrolling through the list and you're seeing crap jumping up on the screen already. It's like it literally, their menu is playing videos to you. It's like, how much of my bandwidth are you eating up just for me scrolling through this crap? I almost want to turn it off. Yeah, good for everybody else in the world that gets infinite bandwidth, but for me, that sucks. There probably should be a way to turn that off.
One other thing to consider, and then
are you going to end on a negative note? I just went through the process of going on a positive note.
No, I think this is probably more of a positive thing. I am really very curious as to the backlash that they're going to get production side. I want to see what the producers do. If they bend to the will of Sony out of this, or if they say enough is enough and be done with it.
I'm totally on the same page as you. Like, I hope that there is a group of those, like, that they don't like this. That they don't like being... Maybe they've always been avoiding Funimation because of Sony. I mean, technically, Sony technically owns Aniplex, which owns a lot of studios. A1 Pictures is a big one. Have you ever seen an anime made by A1 Pictures? That's Sony. It's technically Sony. So there's a lot of titles that are technically already pretty much a part of Sony's platform, part of Funimation. but there's the other ones. And it was a funny thing because somebody was talking about, you know, what if Crunchyroll and Funimation becomes Aniplex? Like, they brand it as Aniplex as being the anime source. I like that name, by the way. I like Aniplex as a name. It just rolls off the tongue. I've always liked the name. But how does one of these other studios that's not A1 Pictures, that's not CloverWorks, how do they feel about their title being branded Aniplex? There's just a lot of those little questions of, like, how do these studios over there really feel about the idea of Sony really brand? How much of the stuff on Crunchyroll, how much of the stuff that's on Sentai Filmworks, High Dive, how much of that is them not wanting to play ball with these other studios and being under their brand? It's a big curious question. And I'm really curious if that's going to be one of those things that, yeah, for other reasons besides that, like, yeah, what if they don't like, you know, Sony come up and saying, you know, you need to alter this so for our audience over here. And they go, get out of here. We'll find somebody else. And they don't give it to anybody. If Sony's their only option, they're like, no, I'm just not going to give it to anybody over there. Like, there is quite a bit of history about the inner workings of companies where their ego is much more important than money.
Yeah.
It's just a thing. And now, that's not just a Japanese thing. I hate the idea of, you know, making people believe that, because there's enough stereotypes of Japan. Like, overworking for some reason is a stereotype of Japan. It happens everywhere. But this, that was the other thing. I keep hearing this one streamer that I watch a lot of time. They always complain about the fact that there's so many, that Japan's so behind in technology, they still have fax machines. The hell are you talking about? There's tons of companies over here that have fax machines. I haven't worked in a single company that doesn't have a fax machine. It's just a staple of the old times that for some reason a lot of companies don't want to give up. Because there's the hope that one thing comes through that fax machine a year that will make it worth it. It's just a stupid expense for some reason they keep going with. But anyways, I lost my track of my train of thought here. But,
well, if you're going to have a scanner, you might as well have a fax machine.
But the pride thing. It's just something I've heard several stories in Japan is a thing, and or at least some companies. And I can see that becoming, you know, one of those things that shifts just something a little bit. That, yeah, may lead to High Dive being able to sneak in there just based on how confident is Sony going to walk into those doors next coming seasons? How full of themselves are they going to be that, again, when they announced, you know, hey, I'm going to give you $100 per episode. It's crazy to think that. And then they go, I'd rather not. Because there is an element that you would assume. I'm gonna make an A out of myself here and assume that a lot of these producers, when they make a show and they've gotten the cost of this stuff so high per episode of anime, we've talked about this before, that they may be so willing to not devalue, I think we've talked about this before, devalue what they own by going for it. Even if there is a monopoly in the West, they won't devalue their art, what they've created, by giving something up for just a measly amount of money. They'd be more willing to go, no, we won't. I mean, yeah, it's the only option we have. We might make a couple thousand, but I'd rather not, just to keep our cost up, just to keep that value up. And you might have a season where nobody gets anything because they're not willing to give it up for that lower cost. And then Sony's going to have to go, they didn't take the bite. We're going to have to pay. Let's give them a little bit less. Let's try to bring it down a little bit. It's going to be a reverse bidding war, I think, that's going to happen, if I can guess, educated guess. But holy crap, we should spend an entire episode on this alone.
it's going to be interesting to see who calls the bluff when all is said and done.
Yeah. And like I said, I hope that High Dive is standing there going, we got a little money. We can invest it. We got to take the plunge, take that jump. And I hope people support them, and I hope people are patient. That's the key thing, is patience with them. Is that it? Have we beat this horse to death? That was, like I said, almost about an hour of talking.
Is Sunrise's stream service still up?
The I looked it up, the Daisuke.net. Was it Daisuke? That one?
Yeah.
I finally found a thumb or a bookmark for that page on one of my browsers, and I'm like, I wonder, and I clicked on it, and sure enough, it's like, this doesn't exist. Yeah. No, Sunrise was, I think the recent we had was that they were going to go on YouTube.
YouTube was the other alternative that they were thinking about.
Which, I mean, great there, because they both have a subscription model and a ad model. So,
and I think I've mentioned this before, as it stands right now, I don't think it's going to be that hard for, between the machine learning and a lot of the things that are going on right now, I don't see why these production companies can't go their own way. That's why I was saying it'll be interesting to see.
That might be the alternative thing, future, is that they just all go, Sony's wanting to offer us way less now, and they're demanding all this stuff. Let's just do our own thing.
Yeah. And I don't see why they can't do it. It's not, they have the rights to stream it. So why not? I mean,
it's their product.
I know it's one more thing that they have to worry about that they don't want to worry about. Yeah, I think it's really what it comes down to.
There's a lot of things behind the scenes that technically, as much as we don't want to admit it, a lot of these companies that license go through. They have to make sure this stuff is legal in their zones. Like, technically, I'm just giving a random example. Billy Bob's licensing in America decides to bring over an extremely raunchy hentai with, the depiction of underage characters. They can't do it. Like, there's laws against some of the stuff in there. There's certain regions, like not just in the United States. There's
about that with Revengers
the Manji symbol Germany. Literally is illegal to have. I mean, there is a lot of depictions, a lot of context, a lot of stories that are legally not allowed in certain countries, and a lot of these licensors have to go through all that stuff. And it's a lot. The reason why I believe that a lot of companies aren't in certain regions is because they don't want to avoid that. Again, Netflix is the first one that really wants to tackle that, and that's why it's such a big feat that they are so on top of this being worldwide, is that they're going through all this stuff. They're going through all the red tape and licensing problems that you're going to face doing that. So, very interesting. Very interesting. Plus, also having servers in a lot of areas. So, yep. That's that. That was a fun discussion. Is that it? Can we call that case close? Thanks for an hour of content, Sony, I guess, ? Not looking forward to the future, but again, it's not set in stone. There's definitely different routes this can go, and definitely a lot that can go positive, so we'll have to wait and see. Other news, we do have some other news, and there's some really positive stuff in here, so I'm super excited to really get in some of this stuff, so let's get into it. One that I'm kind of mixed on is that my youth romantic comedy Is Wrong As I Expected is getting a new novel. I'm not going to say what it's going to be centered around. If you have kept it up with the series, you'll probably know what that is. I don't necessarily see it being as an alternative story. It sounds like it's more just a sub-story, an addition, so I don't think that they're changing the ending, but I don't know. We'll wait to see. Maybe it'll become an OVA at some point, but it's one of those 14.5 kind of things, a sub-story kind of things. So, there you go. I already talked about that one, Higurashi. They have leaks. This is great. This is fantastic, and I know Chris is probably going to be super happy about this. But Aharen-san wa Hakaranai is getting an anime adaptation for April of 2022 to premiere. The English title is Aharen is Indecipherable, and it looks absolutely adorable because it's got like this character that's like super quiet and super awkward, and she looks like Kana from Maid Dragon. It's really cute. Like, you can't even hear what she's saying. She's like super quiet. But yeah, she's like a super dork as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this. It actually looks really cute. Are you sold yet?
Oh, by far. I'm just stuck staring at it. It's too cute.
I'm curious how that works. She like goes to like a karaoke, and like I said, like she's really quiet, so it's like, is it really even registering anything? Is there a point to it? But yeah, it kind of has that little bit of that contrasting thing between the two characters, because she's kind of very short and he's kind of like very tall. Like I said, she's like super quiet, but like super awkward. But teen romantic comedy follows the indecipherable daily life of short, quiet Reina Ahenin and Raidyo, who sits next to her in class. Ahenin is not so good at gauging the distance between people. I guess that's why she's like right up in his face. He's like sitting down and she's like right up in his face. Raidyo, initially, sensed some distance between the two of them. Then one day when Raidyo picked up her eraser that Ahenin had dropped, the distance between them suddenly became uncomfortably close. From way too distant to way too close. So, yeah. It looks really cute. Looks super cute. So, I'm looking forward to that one. There's a lot of stuff that I have in the news here that's, like, literally 2022. So, it's like, can we get 2022 already? Maybe? Please? Toei Animation began streaming a teaser for Kaiju Decode. This is going to be a CG anime in collaboration with Suburara Productions. So, it's a terrible teaser. I'm not even sure why I'm bringing up this news, but interesting to see that another company is doing a kaiju thing. It looks like they're doing the whole human kaiju thing, humanoid kaiju thingy-majiggy, because cute girls, obviously. But the teaser's terrible. I know I'm bringing that up, but teaser's terrible. Like, literally just a bunch of garbly gook CGI effects on the screen. So nothing really comprehensible of character-wise. Netflix has announced that they are producing a live-action series as an extra to the anime series of The Way of the House Husband. The series is going to be 5 4-minute-long episodes that will debut worldwide on Netflix on August 29th. And thankfully, it's going to actually star Kenjiro Suda. So similar to the commercial they did for The Way of the House Husband, they're actually bringing Kenjiro Suda, who is the voice of pretty much this character, as the actor for it. I don't know if I talked about it before, but I remember watching a certain podcast where they were like, I watched the live action of that show, and who the heck is this guy? He's like, it's literally Kenjiro Suda. He is that character. You can't have anybody else be in the live action. But yeah, he's fantastic. So I'm kind of excited for that one. I'll definitely be checking it out. Did you watch the show yet? Yeah, I think you watched it when we were down there.
Yeah, it kind of ended up watching most of it. Yeah.
They're short. They're not very long. Yeah, cool stuff there. Love Kenjiro Suda. Square Enix monthly big Gangan magazine has revealed that the Tale of the Wedding Rings manga is entering its climax in the next issue of that's going to release on August 29th. So
I really need to catch up on that. And that I love that story.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, it's similar to a lot of other manga that I read a lot of. At some point, I just kind of get bored of it. That was kind of one where I'm like, I kind of fell off it. And I'm not sure if I want to go back to it, but
I fell off of it mostly because of time.
Yeah. Cool stuff, though. Cool stuff. Hobonsha's manga Time Kirara magazine has announced that the new game manga will be ending in the October issue of Hobonsha's manga Time Kirara Charat magazine. I should stop just listing these stupid magazines. But anyways, on August 27th, so the manga will be coming to completion. The manga will complete also in its 13th compiled volume to ship in September. So apparently that series is finally coming to an end. What was it like? The first adaptation we watched was probably a good 6 years ago. First new game season. Fortunately, we've only gotten 2 seasons of it. So hopefully this will mark maybe something more adaptation would be great, please. That'd be great, please.
I have a feeling somebody's getting married.
Oh, of course. Of course. Everybody ships it. let's see here. Funimation is going to be screening the Knights of Cydonia anime film in theaters on September 13th. This will be the Knights of Cydonia Love Woven in the Stars, the new movie film that is a sequel to the anime that is technically an original that veers from the original manga that is actually written by the manga creator. So interesting there. This will be screening in U.S. and Canada. It would also stream. They're also going to stream all 24 episodes of the Knights of Cydonia series, both seasons, on August 3rd in U.S., Canada, U.K., Ireland, Australia, and New Zealand. So if you need to get caught up, it's going to be all available on Funimation. So there you go. Interesting. Because that's an interesting one, because that was one that was technically Sentai Filmworks for quite a while. So I'm assuming they pull a license from them. I'll have to check to see if High Dive still has it. But very interesting there. Let's see here. Manga creator Inio Asano has posted on Twitter that he aims to end Dead Dead Demons Destruction manga within a year. So I thought that was one that was supposed to be getting an anime adaptation. they did a 3D animated promotional video. Maybe that's what I was thinking of. But I thought that was getting an anime adaptation. But
I recognize the name. I don't know.
Yeah, I see a lot of it, and I don't think I've never checked out anything on it, but the manga, let's see here, does have a the series revolves around a strange everyday life of a very ordinary high school girl, Karore Koyama, her friend Uran Nakagawa, and others in the world where a giant mothership has appeared over Tokyo. So there you go. Let's see, Platinum End. We've talked about this one. This is apparently from the artist and mangaka of the original Death Note series. Platinum End anime has been revealed to have a premiere of October 7th. I know they had a fall premiere, but now we have an actual date. So mark your calendars if you're excited for that one. So Studio Kai has announced that it will be animating Futo Pai, which is an anime adaptation of the manga Futo Tantai. So interesting there. The let's see, project blah, 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 blah. No information about the story, so there you go. The official website for the anime adaptation of Love After World Domination manga has listed, the cast has listed a teaser that you can check out now, and a 2022 debut. And this one looks fantastic, because it looks like essentially the whole Sentai thing, Power Ranger-esque type thing, where the Red Ranger apparently falls in love with the diabolical evil villain lady. So they're like in the middle of a fight, and he's like, Skeetus. So that would be, that sounds like a really fun idea.
Yeah, it does.
So definitely looking forward to that. She kind of looks like Lucy from Fairy Tail. I guess it's the blonde thing. I'm just going by the blonde thing. So yeah. The power of love will triumph over world domination. So, there you go. Shinobu Otaka's Orient manga anime adaptation has been listed for a 2022 premiere as well. So, if you're looking for that one. At the age of 10, best friends Musashi and Kojiro sat in silence, or in excited silence, as Kojiro's father spun tales of evil demons who preyed upon the innocent and the warriors who defeated them. Practicing swordplay, the two swore an oath to become the strongest in the world. Sounds like a shonen. But as they grow up, Kojiro turns cynical, and Musashi comes to realization that he can't turn back 150 years of demon rules on his own. He's being called a prodigy with a pickaxe, and he's the pickaxe thing threw me off, sorry. And he's almost ready to settle for a life of labor. Yet he can't shake the feeling that he still has a responsibility to act, and soon the injustice of the world will be forced to his hand. Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be one of those childhood friends. One becomes a bad guy, one becomes the sort of bad guy. Naruto, anybody? So,
yeah, I was thinking Edgelord as well.
Yeah. So there you go. It looks like a new shonen around the corner. Be excited for it. This one is kind of interesting. I don't know why. Maybe it's just only recently, but I missed all this information. But apparently Studio Gohan's is going to be suing King Records over a canceled anime. And this one, as I kind of went down the rabbit hole, it got crazier and crazier. But from what I understand, and this is just my brief looking into it, but apparently as they were doing this anime version of this Tokyo Babylon, a lot of people started kind of chiming in and saying that there was a little bit of a, what's the term? The term is escaping, plagiarism plagiarism of character designs and outfits of certain other stuff. And so apparently amidst all this, there was a cancellation of the project, but King Records was already in contract with them to produce. Apparently, they only signed up for one core, but apparently there were talks of two cores. And so now with it canceled, Gohan's wants to sue King Records over this cancellation. And yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, a lot of the plagiarism looks pretty obvious, but we'll go with it. Very interesting, though. I mean, the whole thing, I think Gohan's is really a fantastic company to do this more kind of pretty boy-ish type of storytelling, or at least character designs. Very interesting. The whole situation is very interesting. But, yeah. Interesting stuff. Super happy news. We can bring up this entire podcast based on one story bait. But yes, apparently the official website for A Sentence of a Bookworm's TV anime has, of course, revealed that this is getting a third season in spring 2022. Super happy.
It's about time.
Need more. Keep coming. Just keep bringing it. Just never stop. I was actually planning on making a video on this. I might do a video of it and post it tomorrow, but just absolute love for this series. It has essentially been like one of the best new anime series that we've had in a long time, that I just love every bit of it. And I'm so happy to see more of it coming, because it's something that I think needs a full adaptation. Just adapt the whole thing. But yeah, that's exciting. Again, another one that we have to wait till next. At least we have a season, unless it gets delayed. We have a season to look forward to for the third season. But yeah, super, super excited for it. Really great series. And like I said, I'll do a video on it later if you guys want to know more about A Sentence of a Bookworm. I know that we haven't really... It hasn't been in a season since I started doing the YouTube channel, so I'd love to do like a little kind of breakdown of talking about
my love for the series. We should look to see if she's got some figures out there, because you know she's got to be popular if they're going for a third season.
That's true. That's got to be something. See, Funimation has begun to stream Kakushigoto compilation films exclusively on their site. So if you maybe missed the anime series, you can check out the compilation films instead. I don't know if that's shorter. It might be shorter. I don't know if they improved some stuff with it, but there you go. Cool stuff. Because I don't know if the compilation film had something new in it. I forget. I know we talked about it a while back, but I'm not sure if there was new content to it. Might have to look into that. Sometimes they do that, just to bring in the old viewers. The official website for Sakugan reveals a new visual and October 7th premiere date. This is Studio Satellite's adaptation of Sakugan Labyrinth Marker novel. This is going to be a terrible synopsis. The distant future, long after the Western calendar is no longer used, humans live shoulder to shoulder, cramped in the labyrinth, an underground world deep with below the surface. There are many colonies where people live in underground labyrinth. The place is known as extremely high temperatures, but also for loads of gold, silver, and riches. In one of these colonies named Pinin, a curious 9-year-old girl named Mimimpu and her father Gagumber board a 2-person work robot and mine for ore. They eke a living as the lowest of lowest worker occupations. One day, Mimimpu begs her father Gagumber. Do we have to say the names again? The daughter begs the father to set up as markers. Those who chart the innards of the labyrinth as a spelunker to search for her mother who left their home. That sounds like Made in Abyss.
Right?
It sounds very much like Made in Abyss. That's fine. It's a concept that's proven to be successful, so why not? But cool stuff. And it might be something that came out before Made in Abyss. Please don't yell at me if it is the case. Crunchyroll apparently has already screened the first episode, so yeah, cool stuff. Apparently, it's probably going to be on Crunchyroll. Girls Frontline TV anime gets a new promo video revealing staff, theme, song, and a 2022 debut. So another 2022 anime. This is one of those gacha game things that I ran away from really quickly. But I know people still play it. Still successful.
It was one of my favorites. So I absolutely loved the artwork, and the characters were really... more cool than cutesy. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
That was the unfortunate thing, though, is I kind of felt after a while, everybody, all the characters started looking
the same.
Looks
like they're going to be brutal on it.
Yeah, that was totally like one of those like Android thing. Look at like mean blood. It's just like, yeah, that's not blood. What is that? That's not blood.
Just keep repeating it. I'm sure I want to see it like 10 more times.
Shot the head over and over again. But yeah. Cool stuff, though. Cool stuff. For girls, frontline fans. Amazon Prime Video in Japan has listed a new English dub casting for the Evangelion 1.11, 2.22, and 3.33 films. So this is kind of an interesting thing. I really don't keep up on the dub stuff, so I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that are going to get angry if I even talk about this and I get stuff wrong. But it's apparently them essentially going back to the old cast of individuals for it, like Spike Spencer, Amanda Wynn Lee. I know a lot of people are super excited about that. I did like the original cast of the Evangelion series, and obviously they changed a lot of that stuff when they went to do the Netflix redub of the original series. So I'm certain there's a lot of dub fans that are super happy about this kind of being revealed. So really cool stuff. I guess for some dub fans out there, that's really cool news. So I thought we'd throw that in here. It's good news. Like I said, it's technically one of those. It's kind of like the Cowboy Bebop thing for me. It's technically one of those things, but I do technically care because I grew up with the dub, so it's more acceptable to me. But I'm just not as huge into the names and stuff. I couldn't tell you any other names. But yeah, very interesting move by Amazon there, which does technically make me wonder if Amazon Prime will have all the films in the future in the West. But
it's kind of one of the sad things is I don't recognize a lot of the names, and except for the fact that I wouldn't have recognized any of the names like what 3 years ago, and now suddenly technically I know a few of the names because of dramas that have forced their way over into the sub sphere.
Yeah, you can't ignore it kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hanabi-chan wa ukurekachi, or Hanabi-chan is often late. Manga is getting an anime adaptation. This one's weird. It's the manga's images imagines if Universal Entertainment's Hanabi, which is fireworks, obviously, versus and Thunder V Pachi Slow machines were girls working in a pachinko hall. This is definitely going to be a short. I can just feel this is going to be a short, but okay, I guess. Working at a pachinko place, because we all love pachinko and what it does to other industries. This is the other one that I want to technically note to people. Now, granted, they're more into older titles, but RetroQuest is another one that I think people should probably support. But RetroQuest has added the titles, or at least they're going to be adding the titles. Revolutionary Girl Utena, Adolescence of Utena on August 6th. Boogie Pop Phantom, August 13th. Boogie Pop and Others on 13th. Martian's Successor Nadesco on the 20th. Martian's Successor Disco Giga Gengar 3 on August 20th. I know I butchered that name. Sorry. Martian's Successor Nadesco, the motion picture Prince of Darkness on August 20th. Tetsujin 28 on 27th. Tetsujin 28, Morning Moon of Midday on the 27th. So, again, if that's some interesting stuff to you, definitely check that out. And like I said, support them, even though technically I think they're more focused on older stuff. I guess technically like some of these like Fugu Pop and others are more newer. But there's nothing to say that RetroQuest can't start getting newer titles.
Yeah, I've dinked into them a few times. Their Roku app seems to be pretty solid right now. And they have some an interesting service that I've kind of mentioned before of the constant streaming of a show. So you can just click on to the RetroQuest and just do their live feed and it'll just play shows.
Yep, and it's free, ad supported. So there you go. See here, other cool news. We finally got a date for Usagi-chan Wants to Hang Out, the second season. They have finally announced that it is going to air in 2022. This is like so not news. But yeah, like I said, they technically announced that they were going to have a second season, I think, shortly after the first season ended. But now, apparently, they felt it necessary to let us know that, hey, it's going to come in next year sometime, somewhere, maybe fall, maybe spring. I think it'll probably be a spring show, but that's just my guess. So
stupid cat.
Oh, yeah. That was the only thing that bugged me when I seen this. Is like, oh, yeah, the stupid cat. I got another season of that stupid cat. This, I'm surprised, got past me, because this is extremely exciting for me. Discotech has announced new titles that it has licensed for at Otakon Home, Otakon. Gunbuster, the entire series, not just the movie, Gunbuster, the Blu-ray, they're going to do a Blu-ray release of all 6 episodes with a new dub and releasing it in 2022. I think that is super awesome. I've been actually, it's like, I think there's a lot of people, including myself, that have kind of been begging for this. I know it's great to have the movie and everything, but having the entire series is fantastic. It's great, great animation artwork in that series. So, like I said, I'm looking extremely forward to this release. But they had some other stuff they announced. they're going to do Girly Air Force, which I don't know that anybody really picked up. I think I want to say that Funimation streamed it. No, it couldn't have been. It had been a Crunchyroll, because Funimation would have released it on physical.
I don't remember, because I want to say if it was out, we would have watched it, but it didn't. I don't seem to remember it popping up on any of our feeds.
I want to say it was Crunchyroll. Yep, Crunchyroll had it. So that makes sense, because Crunchyroll doesn't do physical releases. So it was streaming on Crunchyroll. It wouldn't have gotten a physical release. But they're going to do it. So they're going to do a Blu-ray release of it. So that's going to be in late 2021. They also got Tomorrow's Joe 2, the movie. They're going to be releasing a Blu-ray of that with Japanese, with English sub. I guess I should have noted that. They are, like I said, they're going to do a dub of the Gunbuster series. They're not going to do any dub for the Girly Air Force. Tomorrow's Joe 2 is going to get no dub, but a Blu-ray release late 2021. Legendary Armor Samurai Troopers is getting a Blu-ray release. doesn't look a dub. Cutie Honey the Live Blu-ray release. I'm having problems saying Blu-ray release. Blu-ray release. No dub, late 2021 or early 2022. Lupin the Third versus Detective Conan the movie. I've heard some people are really big fans of that one. That's going to have a late 2021 release. No dub. Let's see. Lupin the Third, The Mystery of Mamo. It's getting a Blu-ray release. No dub. Oh, wait. As well as 4 separate English dubs. Is it like 4 different people dubbed this thing? That's crazy. Sayuki Reloaded. I remember that one. That's a blast for the past. That's getting an SD Blu-ray release. That's not even getting a Blu-ray release. They probably have HD assets for it. Oh, that's unfortunate. That's getting a late 2021, early 2022 release with an English dub. Ginyan's one. Ginyan's. Maybe I'm thinking of the old. This must be the old one, because I know this was something they did again. So maybe it doesn't have HD assets. I'm probably wrong there. This is pretty cool. Robot Carnival, which is kind of like a hodgepodge of different animators in a setup.
One of my favorite artists is in here.
Yeah, this one's apparently, they're going to do a 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray release of Robot Carnival. So that is really cool. I have that, I think, on DVD.
Do you?
I don't know if I have a DVD or Blu-ray, but that's super cool. That is definitely cool. And the last one is Machine Robo Revenge of Kronos. This is getting an SD Blu-ray release of all 47 episodes. No dub, early 2022. So, oh yeah, and I don't know if I talked about this on here yet, but yeah, they're also doing the Blu-ray disc release remasters of the Project Echo films, which is, I'm upset because I just recently bought all their DVDs releases of Project Echo, but I'm perfectly fine with rebuying because I love Project Echo, because it's pretty much like the epitome of goofy otaku-ness. So, cool stuff there. Let's see. In the Land of Lidal, TV anime is getting a January 2022 premiere, and they have released a promo video of it. The synopsis is the last thing she can remember in her life is her life support beginning to fail. Her body had suffered terribly after a fateful accident, and the only freedom left in her life came from a VR world of Liddell. How did she end up in the a place that looks exactly like her game, except 200 years have apparently gone by? Probably went into a VR coma and they patched it to death. Yeah, kind of sounds like the Rosaria arc. Is it called the Rosaria's Mother's Rosario arc of Sword Art Online? The idea of, like, you know, people in coma or whatever being able to do something within, like, a VR world, and then her actually becoming a part of it. So sounds cute. Hopefully she can find happiness. That's going to be, like, the gist of this story is you're going to be like, this poor girl, I just want her to be happy. She's happy in a world now. Be happy. So cool stuff. Looking forward to that one. I know we talked about that one before, but it's cool to get more information about it. The Vampire Dies in No Time anime gets an October 4th debut. This one, the gag manga centers around Dralk. Dralk, a vampire who is feared as he is rumored to be
totally invincible. Not Dracula.
Yeah, not Dracula. They can't say that. That's copyrighted. The vampire hunter Ronaldo goes to Dralk's castle after hearing that Dralk has kidnapped a child. But when Ronaldo arrives at the castle, he finds that Dralk keeps dying over every small thing and turning into dust. That's going to be the punchline of every skit.
Yep.
Drock's true nature is that he is the weakest vampire of them all. I can see, like, him just tripping and is dying. That sounds fun. So, it just depends on if that joke's going to get old really quickly or if they can manage to do, like, some shows where they have a punchline like that and somehow manage to keep it fresh. So, good luck there. And our last one we have is Planet With manga is apparently entering its final arc. This was revealed in a July 30th issue of Shonen Ganhosha's Young King R's magazine. So I'm curious if that one went beyond the anime, because I felt like the anime was pretty conclusive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it seemed like it opened up just at the end, but it felt like a solid chapter close for what we got.
Yeah, it was kind of opening up more in the regards it was technically talking about a lot of the past stuff, but it was like opening up the world to make the story come to conclusion. I think it's been a while. Planet With is a fantastic anime, by the way. You should probably go check that out. I think that was one of our biggest pick for that particular year. So 2018, holy crap, it makes us feel old when I see things that I think are recent and it's like, oh, no, that was like 3 years ago. It's just how it is. It's how it is. And that's it. That's it for the news. We have some time, surprisingly, for some questions from our community members. Again, if you want to give us a question, we definitely welcome it. You can go to otakuspear.com. There's many links there, one being Contact Us, which sends a direct question to us. You can go to the forums and ask a question there on our AnimeCast question thread. You can just email andrew@otakuspear.com. There's lots of ways you can get a hold of us to let us know your questions. I do want to take a brief moment, because I knew that when we were talking about this particular question from Bacon Chips, that I would probably think of a story after we got off the podcast, and I did. So I thought I would, you know, make it right, because we technically didn't really tell any good stories. And I knew that the moment I'd be editing, I'd be like, yeah, that was stupid. And it was funny because it was actually I was talking about that time frame, and I should have thought of the story at that point, because I was talking about my whole experience working. For those, catch people up, basically Bacon Chips talks about this really, he wanted to question us on the weirdest story we had with a stranger, and his was apparently some unfortunate situation with a snake, a rubber snake. But yeah, I started talking about, like, working graveyard shifts and how terrible it was, and that was technically during the time where, here's a big shocker, I'm not sure if I've talked about this before, I used to be a part of a car club, and funny enough, it was a Saturn car club, and this is like a little bit after high school. I was a part of a Saturn car club, and I had a crappy 96 single overhead cam sports coupe, and I thought it was the coolest thing, because, well, I bought it from our other brother, and it had the noisiest muffler possible, so it was like, it sounds like it's some kind of race car, but it's not. Big, huge subwoofer inside of a crappy box in the trunk, so you couldn't put anything in the trunk because it had this big stupid subwoofer. I had glow lights in the dash. I had so many LEDs all over the thing, just trying to be cool. Short shift, had to have the short shift. I actually cut the shifter just so I could have a short shift because, you know, you have to have those quick shifting. But yeah, one time we went out a lot at night. Like I said, the unfortunate thing was like by 9 or 10, I had to leave to go to work. And that was usually when we were going out, is at night. But we'd always kind of hang out together. At some point, there was this guy with like a Mitsubishi, and he used to always come around and like talk crap. And so our club leader, he had like a 96, 95 or something like that. He had a dual overhead cam, so he had like a lot more horsepower than mine did. He challenged him to a race, and so enough, we went all the way out into the middle of nowhere, which by this point in that area is now full of housing. But it was like nothing in the area at the time. It was like just outside of town, just outside of where the mall was. And so all of our cars were all lined up on the side of the road, and they were kind of set up so they can do the race on a little strip there, a little straight strip. And he didn't want to have any, I don't know if it was like a weight thing or he just wanted to not have anybody else in the car in case something happened. He sticks his girlfriend and his like best friend into my car and they go racing. They haul butt down the street. I don't remember who won. I want to say the Mitsubishi won, but anyways, after the race, like right, and that's probably why I don't know who won, is because like right when they were going down to the end, the sirens went off. Like there was cops everywhere. Like they knew we were setting up for something, and so they called like all the police down there or something. They just came out of nowhere. Suddenly there's like 5 or 6 police cars with sirens and everything going off. And the entire time, like what happens is like the sirens are going off, everybody stopped. And then suddenly this cop car is like going down the stretch of all these cars parked on the side of the road. And they're in the back of the car going, dude, just go. Dude, just go. And I'm like, no, I'm not going nowhere. They're going to chase me down. You think I'm stupid? And yeah, they go to each car, roll down the window. And they're like, if I catch you out of here again, I'm going to take your license and your car. And I'm like, okay. And they just went by and went to the next one. And we go to leave. And it was the stupidest thing, because here's the awkward thing, that kind of, not just the fact that whole situation happened, and it involves a lot of people, I don't even know who they were, but more the fact that, like, after this, for some reason, I somehow get in the middle of some weird spout between him and his girlfriend. Like, we're leaving, and we went somewhere to kind of meet up, and he calls her up. And says something to the effect of, well, if you just want to stay in that car, have fun with your new boyfriend. And I'm like, whoa, why am I getting, I have nothing to do with this girl. You put her in my car and now I'm suddenly trying to steal her from you. It was like the most awkward situation I've ever been put in, because she wants to make a point out of it. He wants to make a point out of it. And I'm just like, please just get out of my car so I can get out of this situation. I don't have any interest whatsoever in you. the entire time the friend of his is like trying to downplay it, and she's getting mad, and it's like, can I just take you home? But no, I don't want to take you home. Let's just find a parking lot somewhere and you can get a ride from somebody else. I just don't want anything to do with this. There was a lot of really crazy moments. Like I had so much fun. Like when I was working those graveyard shifts, I used to technically race down that stretch all the time with my car. Race, as we call them, racers. Hondas, we always like to beat them because they always thought they were the greatest ever. But yeah, fun times. Super awkward. Like everything about that entire night was super awkward. Having to, yeah, it was cool going out there with a whole bunch of people and watching a race. It was super awkward having to deal with them and the police. The police situation was awkward. The whole girlfriend thing was awkward. I just wanted to get out of there. But there you go, Bacon Chips. You got a story out of me. I'm sorry that I didn't have anything for you last week. I feel bad when we actually ask for questions and we don't deliver. Because, like, I asked you for it and then I didn't take the time to really give you a great answer. So there you go. Did you think of anything?
Watch Bacon Chips send you a message from the dark web saying, yeah, that was me the whole time. I've been stalking you for 20-some years.
I was the girlfriend. I wanted to stay in your car. Why did you let me out of your car?
Now he's going to do that just to be a dork.
Probably. Probably. Yari chimes in, says, Yari hears requests for questions, and Rohan shall answer. What are your favorite catchphrases, iconic quotes from anime over the years? Examples being, Chaika, Chaika, Chaika. I'm so cool. Son of a bitch. Which is, of course, a kape. Mura, mura, mura. I don't know what that last one is. I know the first two, but I don't know that,
that's probably the guy from...
probably JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah.
Or Fist in the North Star. Could be Fist in the North Star. Because everything... Technically, everything is a JoJo reference, and technically, JoJo is a reference of Fist of the North Star. I'm going to get so much hate for saying that. I'm going to get so much hate for saying that. Oh, be gentle with me. I don't know. I like quirks, like verbal quirks that a lot of characters have. Like right now, I'm, of course, watching Higurashi, and the moment that Hanyu popped up on the screen, I'm like, I can't wait for the awa-wa-wa-wa that she always does. Of course, there's the knee pause, the me's. The me's in English is so cringy. Like, having this English say who's like, me? I'm like, I don't know why it doesn't work for an English voice actor to say the same thing. I think because it just doesn't sell me on a young child saying it. So it makes it weird. But, yeah.
Who was it that kept saying
Akabi had a lot of really good ones, though, from Steins Gate.
Who was it that kept saying kana?
A lot, because I think that's a lot of a dialect kind of thing. Like, whenever they say something, at the end they say kana. It's usually, like, a dialect thing. So I think there's a lot of them. I'm not sure a specific one. Like, catchphrases and stuff, I don't know. I don't really... Nothing really jumps out at me. We've always... if you... Iconic quotes, we always talk about the...
Byakko. Byakko.
Byakko.
She kept, she had a verbal quirk that I got a kick out of.
Yeah, yeah, true. From ReZero.
They kept translating as,
I guess, or something like that.
I guess, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gashira.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I like a lot, and it's crazy because I love a lot of dialect, too. I think they're different dialects and stuff they have in some, like the country bumpkin types of characters are always, I always like, really like them. But, like, actual quote, I mean, we always talk about the, what's the Supernatural Battles King Commonplace, that whole scene with the friend, like, completely blowing up in his face. Like, that entire thing, we love, love that particular one.
Yeah, quotes, is this a Super Saiyan bargain sale?
we can give a quote to an English dub. There you go. It's a Super Saiyan bargain sale. We love that one. That's one of those genius lines. And I'm curious if that's a direct translation sort, not a direct translation, but a similar translation.
I wonder.
It's probably one of those things where is everybody a Super Saiyan now or something like that.
Yeah.
But I have to give the writers credit on that one. That became such an iconic phrase. It just worked. It just worked so well.
It's just like over 9,000 that
yeah.
is permanently burned into your brain.
What?
I wonder if it's more because people made it into a meme.
Right, before memes were a thing.
Yeah.
It became a joke, and then people started labeling it as a meme, because everything has to be labeled a meme now. Every joke has to be labeled a meme now.
But yeah, Super Saiyan Bargain Sale is one of those that I've always loved. Vegeta has so many quotable quotes, for sure.
A recent one, Remake Our Life. This sucks, because I'm terrible at remembering phrases. Like, we had at some point, we were talking about, like, best moments of each year when we were doing the deliberations. We wanted to, like, keep track of when really cool stuff happens, and we never do. So it, like, turns into this one thing where I might be able to scour some notes that I made to find some really cool quotes, but I never do. Remake Our Life, though, it recently had the teacher in that show pretty much point out, like, everybody is a creator in everything. Like, you make a film, every person involved is the creator. And I was like, that's a really good thing to point out. Like, that we often do that when we were talking about, you know, shows. We always look at, like, the director, series composition, script writers, maybe character designers, original creators, but we never look at things like, you know, the photography director, the background artist. We don't look at these other things that technically all come together to make a show fantastic. And that's kind of unfortunate, but at the same time, I don't have the time to look at every single person that touches a page. The Sakuga people handle that stuff. Let them do that stuff. but yeah, it's there's a lot of really great moments. It's just one of those things where unless I make note of it, I'll forget it within a couple seasons, and it's unfortunate, but yeah. People die when they're killed. No, joking. I hate that whole thing. That's like one of those things where it makes sense and we have to make fun of it because it's easy to make fun of it.
Well,
archers really are made up of archers.
And you know that was a translation thing that just kind of worked, but it's one of those things that
it was a fan translations.
Yeah, I have it as one of my backgrounds that scroll through. I got such a kick out of it, but it's one of those that if you listen to the Japanese, you can tell that they're vastly different words, that it's probably something more along the lines of murder. It means death or something like that. And it's just translated out roughly as people die when they're killed.
Yeah. I looked it up at some point to try to really get like a real clear perspective on it when it was, what it was originally intended as. And yeah, it was essentially the concept of, the end of someone is I'm trying to remember exactly how it was worded, but it was something like the ending of someone is unjust or something like that through murder or something like that. Anyways, this translation stuff, you have a lot more meaning into it, and then it kind of gets,
well,
know,
we talked about
when
that
when it gets translated. Unfortunately,
we talked about that with Wolf Children and how, because one of the last things that, towards the end, a certain character is talking about another character that is leaving them, and how they give them something, but it was translated out as that didn't work really well. Whereas the original Japanese had something to do with teachers and the kanji for teaching was to present something, which is a teaching. Did you receive my teachings or something like that? And it's one of those things that where I don't blame people for being so rigid on the idea of dubs and how they kind of try really hard to make something make sense to the Americans, and why that's why I have a hard time arguing with them, because in their mind it makes sense, and I agree with you. I just don't think that I'm going into the same arguments that we've had a million times of,
well, that's what we always talk about, the idea it's always nice to have like a basic understanding of Japanese, or at least the nice thing about watching subs for a while is you do catch, not that you know what each word individually means, but you catch phrases. And like an example of this is, I was telling you the other day, not really the other day, it was about a week or so ago, because it's been so long since we had a Love Live episode. So Love Live Superstars taking a big long break.
Looks like we're getting Blondie next week.
I think it's aired now. So
no, the third episode is up, but previewed
it's not four, really?
Yeah, episode four is going to get Blondie.
I'm not looking forward to the show until
she was in. She was in this episode.
Yeah, she kind of sneaks in every now and then. But I was telling Chris at some point, it was funny because this particular scene, they're talking about the fact that they got the okay to make the club, but they have to get first place in this competition. And so when they tell that to her friend, I'm forgetting names right now, but when they tell that to the friend, her response is "domai," which is a phrase that they typically use whenever you'll see a lot in sports. Whenever they're playing a game and somebody loses a point or something like that, they say "don't mind." It's kind of like, you know, buck up, you know, let's keep going.
It's
don't worry about it kind of thing.
It's kind of a bastardized "don't mind."
That's what I always kind of joke about it sounding like. But yeah. So and when they translate it, it gets translated to, was it good luck? I think like that. It was translated to something like good luck. And so their response, obviously, is like, you know, don't, we're not giving up yet. So it completely ruins the idea that they're saying, look, we have this chance. And then she comes back and says, she's pretty much already accepting that they're defeated. And she's saying, buck up. And then their response is, we haven't given up yet. So her saying good luck in the translation, it's not that it's a bad translation, because it's like, how do you translate that? But it still kind of changes the meaning a little bit from being something. I actually chuckled because I heard her say "Don Mai" before I even read the subtitles, and I laughed, and then I read the subtitles and said, yeah, I guess. Mm-hmm. it was kind of a funny moment where I'm like, I got a lot more context out of that. It makes a lot more sense to me.
It is one of those things where, yeah, and I know it sounds like we're being overly critical, but when it comes down to it, this is literally what we go through when we're, because we've literally been watching anime for 20 some odd years, and we've started picking up the phrases. And while no, we're not Japanese majors, we are still naturally picking it up. And it's funny that we're actually sitting here going, why did you translate it that way? That doesn't make any sense. No, yeah, I'm not a translator, but I do understand it.
Yeah, it's impossible for your mind not pick up on phrases and translate it yourself. Because mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I watch a show where they're playing a game, you know, a sports game or something, and somebody misses a ball and you hear, Domai.
Yeah.
It's so ingrained in my head that is a response to somebody losing a point or something like that, and them trying to, you know, tell somebody to buck up. You know, it's okay, let's go, let's do it again. Again, don't mind is what my mind goes to. And to finally hear it, and then I hear it and it's translated good luck, I'm like, no, they don't say good luck every time somebody misses a ball. It's like, no, it's don't mind. It's different, but...
especially hear it in because we've had a lot of volleyball animes in the last few years. You'll hear it a lot there. It's blatant. You'll hear it tons every time.
Remain,
the ball hits the ground.
Yeah, Remain. You'll hear it. They lose a point. They say don't mind. So don't mind. It's funny though. Anyways, I guess that answers your question. Yeah, unfortunately, my memory sucks with catchphrases and stuff. I wish that I would keep up more on that stuff, just because I know there's a lot of points where I go, that was a really cool line. But it usually comes down to a lot in verbal tics and stuff, and nipahs. In a similar vein, what is your favorite type of speech, unique way of talking a certain character has? That just went right into what I was saying. The old aristocratic geisha-like way. I know what the answer for Chris is. Shinobu Oshino talks. The hick kanzai accent Yume from Gengar Fantasy and Ash has. Love that one. The way they portray punks in Yakuza speaking, unlike the... Tim, yeah. I know what the answer for Chris is.
What's that?
The ohoho ringlets way of talking.
I get a kick out of that. I do get a kick out of ohohos and ara-aras. But it's more of a just an amusement. It's not necessarily my favorites. Like I said, Byakko, hers was easily probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed the kanzai dialect.
Yeah, I do. I did think that Yume was cute. So,
and I'm curious what that is. It's almost like, and I almost want to feel. I almost feel like I'm being insulting to it. But it's almost like I wonder if I like the whole idea of the accents and the dialects and kanzai and all kind of stuff. Is a thing of like how. I guess how slurred it is, that it sounds so different than any other speech that you hear in an anime. Like you attach to it because it sounds unique, but also at the same time it sounds slurred in a way that sounds almost, I don't know, juvenile. I just have a lack for another word for it.
Well, it's the cuteness of it. There is like you were saying, the kind of uniqueness is one of those things that is very, very, what's the word? Appealing. Mm-hmm. Tan characters. Off the top of my head, I have for one of my icons for the longest time, I had the girl from Tomoko Market. I think she's absolutely adorable. Mm-hmm. one of my favorite voice actresses, who is criminally unused, is the girl from Little Busters, Kamikita, I think is her name. She has a very nasally voice that.
Oh yeah,
and she
liked it to like nothing, didn't she? Like,
yeah, she just went off into the abyss and is never used anymore.
I hope that wasn't a case that people didn't like the fact that she was so nasally and they bullied her out of the industry.
I think that's very much a lot of it, because she gets a lot of hate on her. Especially, at least on our side, I don't know if she gets the same kind of
Kamari,
hate.
Kamari, right? Kamari, the blonde hair girl?
Kamari, yeah.
The one you get the first pantsuit shot from?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that her?
Yes.
She's a lot more than I thought that she did.
Oh, she's...
Just hasn't done anything since. Yeah, there's like nothing really since then.
She's done one. I know she... Yeah, she's... That's her, because she's an F, and I know that she's one of the main characters over there, too. It's one of those things that
I think the only recent one was the Grisaia movie. Other than that, it's like just literally Little Busters, and that was it. It's crazy.
And it's frustrating, because I love her. I really because of how unique she is. Just like Aoyuki, Rie Kajimiya, she's a very unique voice. And these are characters that are so unique that they... Kendra Suda is so unique that they stand out. And the second you hear them, it's like, I know exactly who that is. I can tell you almost to a T over and over and over. I can give you an entire list of all the shows that they're in. That's how unique that character is. And that's one of the things. Just like Heterochromia. It's one of those things like that stands out so much that it's almost impossible not to fall in love with that particular quirk.
Yeah, I'd probably say Kansai or any kind of dialect is always a plus for me. I'm a fan of the Ojo, the Ohoho ringlets type of thing. The Sundere character type. I think Sundere has its own unique speeches too, because it's always kind of has a... The way that it says everything is always pushed, I guess.
You almost want to help him out with the humph.
Yeah, you just hear it. You hear it in the back of your head. And of course, Neko Nyans.
Mm-hmm.
that's a speech type. You always have to end everything with a nyan.
I get a kick out of how they're getting more clever with it and actually in just incorporating it into the speech. I love it when they do that. That is just, and
it sucks when it goes to the English translation or the dub.
You can hear it in their discussion, and it's like, oh my gosh, that's such a kick that they're doing that. Sometimes the translation will pick it up. Sometimes they won't. When they do a forced meow in the middle of the text, that's just stupid.
I was just about to say that. That is one of those things where it's like, just... I mean, that's like whenever somebody has... again, whenever they do like the Kansai accents and stuff like that, what do? They make it in some kind of southern thing.
Yeah.
And they'll have like the speech is messed up. And it's really frustrating. It's like, it's almost where I want to go, just let the audible aspect give you an indication that they have some sort of pattern to their speech. Don't put it into the subtitles. And to have, like, you know, whenever somebody says another or something like that, they say nother or something like that, they'll put, you know, whatever, hyphen another, and they won't put the A on there. And it's like, but I'm reading the subtitles to get a translation. I don't need a translation of some sort of messed up translation to give me the indication that they're Southern or something like that, when they're not Southern. They're just, you know, again, Kansai or something like that in Japan. It's frustrating.
They do okay with the Garus. Here and there, for the most part.
Yeah.
Because Garus are difficult to pick up on.
What was that? What was it, the Gymnastic Samurai? That girl, I'm like, I give the subtitler credit for this, because it wasn't that she had some sort of quirk to herself. It's just that she was rambling about the weirdest stuff that made no sense. And even me listening to her, I couldn't understand what she was talking about.
Yeah.
And that was the whole point, was that she just talked absolute gibberish. And I'm like, I give you guys credit for translating this, because I don't understand what the hell she's saying.
Yeah, it is one of those things. Goddesses are probably the hardest. When you pick up on if you've listened to Japanese long enough, you start to pick up on the dialect. You really do. Kansei-ben is such a is one of the stronger ones. It is one of those that is easier to pick up on. Garus are probably, I would say they're harder or they're easier to pick up on than Kansei-ben, but you have to understand the sentence structure, because what they're doing, Japanese is the way that people that I, from what I'm understanding, because I have tried to do kind of Japanese classes to pick up on Japanese, and one of the things that the first things that a good teacher will tell you is Japanese is almost a lazy language. If it's not necessary to make the sentence make sense, they won't put it in there.
Oh yeah, that's definitely that's why I always talk about when we're talking about, you know, direct translations, like pure direct translations. It's like
you're not going to
understand. Make
it.
Sense mm-hmm. because it's almost as if it takes liberties,
yeah,
and says that you're going to understand this without this context, whereas. You know, like the English language, we have to put so many inner words that literally themselves don't make any sense technically. It's just when they're in a structure, they make sense.
And so to take that into consideration, when you go into garus are kind of funky in the fact that they're even more extreme than that. And at the same time, they're also a lot more wordy. So it's like in one respect, they're more short in what they say, and in another respect they're more wordy. They are the biggest kind of hypocrite that you can hear. It's really funny once you start picking it up.
And that's funny because that's like the aspect of the honorifics thing is there. I've heard that there's actually moves with the younger Japanese society to really kind of remove a lot of the honorifics. Like they don't deem it necessary anymore. It's too formal. So there's a lot of them that are, and it's seen as disrespectful, obviously, because you're using honorifics in order to pay respects to somebody that's your elder or your sensei or whatever. But it like just the casual person to person, they're trying to remove it, or at least from what I understand, they're trying to remove it. I haven't really looked into it to really get proof on it. And it makes sense to me. It's like that one of those things of like, do you really need to keep that kind of stuff in there? I kind of see the aspect that there is that respect there that you're losing. But at the same time, does it add too much to a conversation? And that's really, I think, the thing that's trying to pull it out of there is because it's like, it's just a lot of extra thing you're having to say just to, you know, keep the conversation going. Why do you have to say san or whatever at the end of everything you say, or senpai after every time you're talking to somebody about somebody, you have to keep saying senpai at the end of every time you say some of their name. There's a frustration there, I would assume, so. That's Yari also says, thanks in advance. Also, I must say your answers to my previous questions about thighs in the episode review afterwards sure did crack me up good. Well, I'm happy you're happy. Calling me out. I knew it was a thing. It's so funny because I talk about stuff so often with certain shows. Sometimes I forget that I've not or have talked about something before because I've talked about it so many times.
I technically did that with our discussion on the whole thing up at the beginning of the Crunchyroll buyout. I thought about something while we were taking a quick break, and I was like, do I want to interrupt the middle of our topics just to add a two sentence thing? So yeah,
I did too. For me, at least, I tend to listen to the podcast during my work shift, so when I do think about questions, I tend to forget by the time I get home and tired and fall asleep.
Sticky notes are a wonderful thing.
Yeah, sticky notes, or you can use your notes app on your phone if you're using, you know, particular phone. Taku Spirit Banzai. Thanks, Yari. Appreciate the question. I guess we could do the next question really quickly because we're running along. Zachary says, have you seen the Chinese anime Link Click? Watch it. Underrated. Ending is confusing, but there is a season 2 coming. I added it to my watch list on Funimation. not really. It's got a lot of really positive reviews. It's got a really high ranking on MyAmulet, so I'm assuming it's doing really well. But yeah, I just amongst everything, I'm kind of sad that I missed it last season, just because it makes it harder for me to really fit into things once it's out of season with everything else going on. But
we'll see. So there's another one that we're supposed to check out. We're supposed to check out. Everybody is going nuts about that leveling one.
The leveling one.
Yeah, the one the manhwa that where the guy is constantly leveling or working on leveling or something like that. I know somebody's going to recognize exactly what I'm talking about. And I've heard it from like people in different realms. Everybody wants us to do this one manhwa. So there's that one. There's that one. I've been wanting to check out Kingdoms for years, and that one's way, way deep into it now. So
that is the kind of nice thing is like I get a little bit disheartened with some adaptations of more Western stuff, but I think manhwas, Korean, Chinese, a lot of those writers are kind of in the thicket of the same mentality of creativity as Japan. So I'm less like, oh no, it's a Chinese writer. Oh no, it's a Korean writer. I'm more accepting of it just because they're kind of in the same area, and they have a lot of similar, you know, outlooks on, you know, spiritualities and all that other kind of things that are more interesting to me from a Western point of view that I find more fascinating. So I don't know. Like I said, with season two coming, that's actually a good thing, because maybe when season two comes around, that'll kind of push me to watch the first season so that way I can watch the second season. So
look up power leveling manhwa.
Power leveling manhwa. Power leveling manhwa. Oh, hwa. Is it M-A-N-W-A? No, it's H in there. I forgot about the H.
Solo leveling, oh. Maybe. Huh? It's solo leveling.
I did want to watch that one, though. Solo leveling?
Yeah.
Solo.
Yeah, that's the one that everybody's going nuts about, I think.
Solo leveling.
So it must have done something that really amazing, especially since it's only 4 volumes. Oh my gosh, what the heck is it doing? Like I said, everybody's going crazy about it.
Was it adapted?
No, not yet. Oh. Everybody wants us to read the manhwa.
I'm assuming that would probably get a adaptation soon. It's got a really high score, 8.8. That's really good for MyAmulet, which has pretty much everything at, you know, 6 to 7. If something's above 8, you know it's good, because there's, you know, it at least is not being review bombed and it's doing good. So yeah, that's interesting stuff. Is that like how many volumes you say it had?
It looked like 4 from that what was yeah, it says 4 volumes right there.
There you go. Thanks, Zachary, for the questions. Thank you to everybody else for sending in questions. We'll get around to them eventually, but hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We're a little bit long, and hope everybody enjoyed our take on the whole buyout and everything else. Definitely appreciate you guys listening to us and all of your support. All those who support us on Patreon, it's definitely appreciated as well. And supporting us on YouTube by subscribing over there and checking out our videos, hitting some like buttons. It's very awesome. We definitely appreciate everybody and their support. With that, we hope you all enjoyed, and you all take care.
Os. どこにとどめよう